All right, welcome into the bullpen here on Aggie Radio, soon to be 92.3. Super excited about that, as I say every time that I bring up that we're soon to be 92.3. But we are excited. Are we not, Mikey?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
By the way, everyone, we got station manager Mikey is in the house.
Good morning.
Getting ready to talk about some sports stuff. One debate in particular, if you saw on Twitter last night, that we're going to get into kind of deeply, I think. I mean,
very deep.
Yeah, we're going to go way deep that we're going to come out the other side, probably.
deep.
But that is going to be that we're going to talk about, or well, we're going to debate whether the 90s NBA is better than the current NBA. And so, yeah, we're not going to do that right now, but we're going to do that in probably about 15 minutes because, you know, it's been a recurring issue with people that were talking about sports on ESPN and stuff. You'll have guys like Tracy McGrady come on and talk about how the league now is watered down. And to me, I don't necessarily agree with that, but we're going to get into that because it's always relevant. I mean, there's always that whole thing.
It's interesting. Hey, you know something else about Tracy McGrady? Did you know that he played minor league baseball?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, after his NBA career, he became a minor league pitcher for some team called the Skeeters or something. And
the Skeeters.
Yeah, I think they have
the most weird names for minor league teams. Like the one in Idaho Falls, the closest one to where I grew up, they were the Chuckers. Well, I mean, they were the Braves, and then they were the Padres, and currently, I think they're still the same. But for the last while, they've been the Chuckers.
What is a Chucker?
It's a bird.
Oh, okay.
It's like some random bird.
Flying predator. It's a fierce mascot to have. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, but like for me, it's like, that's not very, I don't think it's fearsome. I mean, you just said it was, but I don't think it is.
Well, I'm not a big believer in having to have a fierce mascot or logo. I think it doesn't really matter. I think that it's okay to just have a nice, friendly, you know, dolphin or puppy or something like that.
Dolphins are awesome, though, and puppies. I mean, like, you can put awesome things as your mascot, but you have things like Chuckers and bees. It's just kind of lame. I mean, you can ask anyone from, like, Bonneville High School in Idaho Falls. They're the bees, and, like, almost everyone I've talked to just was like, yeah, it's stupid.
No, bees, that's perfect. It's the Beehive State.
But it was in Idaho.
Oh, it was in Idaho. But still, well, okay. But
it was the neighbors of the Beehive State.
Bees are still an excellent insect, a very essential animal in the food chain and for food production. Very crucial.
Yeah, I mean, they are, but when your mascot is the bees, you don't really inspire fear. And maybe that's why they were never great at any sport while I was around anyway.
Must be.
But yeah, I mean, it's like, pick something that's more, you know, like normal, I guess. I mean, like, you have something like a tiger or some kind of dog or something, a bear. But yeah. not a chucker and not bees.
Yeah.
But,
well, you know, it probably comes down to, if you get a cool artist to make a good-looking logo, you could probably make any mascot, any ridiculous animal or thing be cool if you don't have some kind of a cheesy logo, like Denver Nuggets 80s rainbow-colored mountain or something. Do you remember that? Have you seen those jerseys?
Yeah. Yeah, you can play with those on NBA 2K.
Oh.
Throwback jerseys.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, like, if you're going to go with the whole, I'm going to be a ferocious insect, at least go with hornets. Because, you know, people think that bees are annoying, but, I mean, bees aren't just out to get you. Hornets are. Hornets serve, like, no purpose other than stinging people.
Yeah.
I know that's not technically true, but I'm going with it anyway.
Yeah, no, that's okay. Hornets, yeah, that's a good one. And the Hornets, they have cool, I like their new uniforms. You know, they went into a little bit of a, I guess it was a semi-retirement for a couple of years to become the Bobcats. And I think that they changed back because they were just so awful as the Bobcats. But
part of it was, the reason why they hadn't earlier is because New Orleans. So the team had moved from Charlotte to New Orleans, and they were still the Hornets for a while. And then just last year, they changed to the Pelicans, and so then the naming rights, like, came up this year, and so Michael Jordan went and got him because it's like, you know, Charlotte's the Hornets.
Right.
Which I think is great. I don't get the whole Pelicans thing. I mean, I guess it works for them, but it's not as ridiculous as I initially thought, but I still felt like there'd be a lot of other options.
Yeah, Pelicans is relevant to us because we're talking about fierce mascots. Pelican is not what I would think of as being something that's going to cause me to run for my life. But I don't know. I like their logo. It's got the spread wings.
Yeah.
They can fly. They are a state that borders the Gulf of Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense geographically, but as far as, like, when you think of, like, a cool mascot, you don't think Pelican, like, immediately. You'd have to, like, take a couple years before you get down the list of Pelicans.
But you know what's cool about that, too, is that there's no other teams that I can think of that are called the Pelicans.
It's true.
So I do like the originality of it, because I don't like it when there's, like, 50 teams that are of the same things. Like, we actually have this problem where sometimes when I type in Aggie Radio, I get Texas A&M popping up, because they're called the Aggies, too. We also have, what is it, New Mexico State is called the Aggies. They're pretty close to us, too. They border us. New Mexico borders us. That's too close.
Well, and they were one of our, like, conference rivals for the longest time. We haven't really played them recently. Since we went to the WAC, or to the Mountain West.
Right.
When we were in the WAC, it was basically us and them for basketball at the top of the standings every year. And, yeah, they weren't good enough to come to the Mountain West, so.
Yeah.
Because their football team is just awful.
Yeah.
Just awful. Yeah.
New Mexico, on the other hand, has a little bit of tradition. Brian Urlacher went to New Mexico.
Yeah, New Mexico does pretty well in both sports. But I wouldn't say that I think that they're great at either one.
Yeah.
They do have some good players that have gone through there, but
at
least currently I don't think of them as, like, a great team.
Right. Their team, the New Mexico basketball team, has never really been that good, but they've produced a lot of NBA talent.
Yeah.
Interesting. But it's weird when teams produce a bunch of NBA talent, but they're never good.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, yeah, it's always funny. It's like, remember there was a, well, Paul George, he went to Fresno State, and Fresno State usually is, like, pretty decent. But they're never, like, great at basketball.
Yeah.
But they still have, like, NBA caliber players, like Paul George, and then this guy this year. I'm blanking on his name right now, but their main guy this year.
He's still going to be in there next year? Or
I think he's a senior, but if not, I think he's going to the NBA either way. Right. But he's really good.
Yeah.
I was surprised he wasn't Player of the Year. I wish I could remember his name.
For the Mountain West? Yeah. Player of the Year? Yeah.
Yeah.
So did you get to see him play?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of deceptively good, too.
Yeah.
Because I thought that we had kind of held him in check when they played here, but then he ended up with, like, 30 points or something, or 24 or something.
Whoa.
And it didn't feel like he didn't just get them all at once. He was consistently getting points.
Right.
And he kind of took over in the second half, but still, I mean, he had, like, 16 points at halftime, I think.
Yeah. That's tough in college. You don't have a lot of guys that can put up points like that in college.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's always good when we can shut them down at the Spectrum.
Yeah.
That's one thing I miss for the Spectrum is that we used to, like, right now they have a paper that they give out called the Bangarang. Before it was called the Refraction before, you know, because of the Spectrum Refraction.
Oh, very clever.
And I think that they did a much better job. And this was going on when I was here as a freshman in 2010, 2011. And they were still had that one. And then when I came back, it was the Bangarang. But they did some, like, cool stuff with the refraction that I don't feel like they did, that they're doing with the Bangarang, such as they would, like, give in-depth, like, things about, well, it's kind of similar, but I just felt like there were some things that the refraction did better. But the Bangarang, I'm guessing you don't know about it.
No, I love the title, though.
Yeah, but they basically research the players from the other team that were playing that night, and they find stuff that we can use to make fun of them during the game, like something that they tweeted out or their Twitter handle or just, like, whatever that they can find. And it's awesome when we, like, do our unified cheers and we, like, insert, like, some, like, thing or whatever. And there was one time there was a guy that he has really skinny legs. And so when he was shooting free throws, we were all chanting, "Don't skip leg day."
So who is it that actually produces the paper? Is it the university or?
No, it's just students.
Just a little extracurricular kind of a thing?
Yeah, and I mean, the group that was doing it for a while, probably just for the 4 years, they, I guess, were graduating not this year, but last year.
Uh-huh.
And so they got new people to take it over for them. And I, well, I kind of, like, said that I was interested in doing it, but then I was, like, involved here and stuff, and I was just like, I don't have time to do it. Yeah. So
that'd be cool to get those guys maybe to come on the radio, though.
Maybe. Yeah. To talk to them.
Yeah. Invite them on.
Yeah.
Bangarang people, hit us up. Tweet us.
Tweet us all day. But I guess I kind of want to get to probably my favorite part of the show every week, and that would be the wall. I decided it is a wall because when we put it online, it's going to be like on a wall.
Oh, yeah.
So the wall of shame. And for some reason, I can't ever remember to say it right the first time, no matter how I'm going with it. But for the wall of shame, I've got a few entrances. Did you want to add anyone?
Well, I don't know the names of the people. I'm just going to go with the Alabama football team because they had a couple new dudes pop up for breaking some laws, getting themselves into trouble, playing with some stolen guns. It's very discouraging. I come from that area, and, you know, so it's too bad that we have all these kids that are still making these really stupid decisions and giving college football a bad name.
Yeah, and, yeah, it's really frustrating when you see, like, stories like that all the time. It's like, you guys have the opportunity to play college football, which a lot of people would love to have but don't, and you go in or pulling crap like that and just being dumb all the time. It's like, you've got this great opportunity. Why do you want to waste it so bad?
Yeah. And I wonder what it is that leads them to get into that mindset. I think there's a lot of people around them enabling them and allowing them to just get away with whatever it is that they want to do and have no consequences for their actions. Everybody runs around and kisses their butt because they're on the football team and they're champions.
And because they're really athletic and talented and stuff. And for me, I mean, I think that that's extremely widespread and that, you know, a lot of coaches feel like they can't really do anything about it because, you know, the kids have a bigger name and are going to go places and you're like, you can't, like, everyone's going to be throwing a fit.
You can't tell them no.
Yeah.
Just like with the, what was that guy, Tunzel?
Laramie Tunzel.
Yeah, where he just was like, I mean, I give the guy daps because he was like, you know what? Yeah, I did take money from the coach. He's like, I'm kind of sick of having all these secrets. I'm just going to, like, air this out right now. And it's just apparent, like, the way he just kind of was like, yeah, whatever. It was no big deal. That's just a common practice, apparently, that they break the NCAA rules and give the kids money and have all these under the table deals going on. And
yeah.
It's very slimy.
Yeah, well, on the Laramie Tunzel story, I mean, he got inducted into the under the wall of shame because of you answering those questions. Because you don't answer those questions. Like, I mean, the problem is he had no real experience with media. Because media relations at universities, like, really protect the athletes because they don't want the athletes to say anything dumb that will affect the university.
Yeah.
Kind of like Laramie Tunzel did during the draft.
No, but
I would have to say yes. It's like, I mean, you're going to have to address that, but maybe find a better way to address it than just, I would have to say yes.
I commend the guy for telling the truth, though, at some point and being like, you know what, I want to put this behind me, I want to do the right thing, I'm going to be a good person from now on. This, you know, was someone trying to ruin his life with putting the bong smoking picture up there or whatever.
And yeah,
I think it's cool that he ended up making a decision to just come clean and say, you know what, this is a mistake that I made and I want to put it behind me, and hopefully they could use that to, you know, as an example to other kids to say, like, this is what's going to happen, the things that you put on social media and whatnot. It might come back to haunt you. Someone's going to try to ruin your life if you have these bad relationships with people.
Yeah, and I don't know if they've even figured out who was the one that leaked it yet.
Never I heard about that.
I haven't heard. But actually, I was just thinking back. I was going to put him in the wall of shame, but then I felt bad for him about getting it so attacked that night that I was like, well, I'm not going to do it. And so I was like, yeah. So I didn't actually put him in on the wall of shame, but I almost did.
Well, wall of shame or not, he's a multimillionaire.
Yeah.
So he'll be okay.
Yeah, and hopefully he figures out his crap so that he doesn't, like, find himself in this situation again. But as far as the money that he received, like, for me, I mean, it's one thing that's frustrating about the NCAA is, like, this kid, like, he needed money to pay rent and help pay his mom's electric bill. And so, I mean, obviously Ole Miss does need to be punished because, A, they didn't report it, and B, like, you're not supposed to give money or whatever. But I think that they should be lenient because, I mean, it was for stuff that he needed to do. Unfortunately, the other side of the issue is that, you know, what happened to the money that he had set apart for those things? Like, what was he doing with it?
Yeah, it's a slippery slope when you start to say, well, you know, he didn't ask the assistant coach for money so he could buy marijuana, so we want to be lenient. I think it's really tough make an exception there. But, yeah, I mean, I feel for those kids who, like Arian Foster a couple years ago where it came out, and he was like, you know what, I was totally broke, and I was not doing stupid stuff with money, but I wasn't even able to really, like, eat enough to not be hungry all the time, so I accepted money from coaches. And these kids that come from these really dire straits, you know, I feel bad for them, definitely. And that's the thing. I mean, I believe that the kids that are playing for these giant programs should be getting paid in the first place. You know, but don't make it so that it's this illegal, under-the-table, backroom stuff like Tunzel's having to do and like these other guys are having to do and Reggie Bush, and you end up with all these dark characters that are criminals and stuff that are ending up pulling the strings of the players and then maybe getting into stuff with, you know, point shaving and game fixing and stuff like that. If you just make it up front and you have the kids getting bigger scholarships or whatever, these kids are producing millions of dollars that are playing for those types of programs, Ole Miss, Alabama, USC. I think that the university, I know for sure that the university can afford to give them more money than they are.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, maybe there needs to be some tweaks to it because maybe they aren't getting quite enough, but I don't think that they should straight up pay players, because if you do that based on each university, then it can start being a bidding war, and that's going to just ruin the sport because, you know, everyone's going to go to whoever's going to pay them the most, and so it's going to really destroy the competition throughout the country because everyone's going to want to get paid, and some universities aren't going to be able to afford what others can afford.
Yeah, I totally see what you're saying, but I think the problem is that bidding war already exists, but it's behind closed doors. And that's the problem. But, yeah, totally. You know, we don't want to screw up the whole competition and that whole element. And, like, USU, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing, though. USU probably does not – I would think that they don't really engage in that type of thing. So they do miss out on recruiting people who are like, well, you're not going to give me money, so I'm going to go to a school that I know is going to give me money illegally. And, you know, I would hope that USU doesn't engage in that and they want to, like, maintain their integrity. But it seems to be the norm for a lot of these big-time schools. If you want to be champions and you want to have these kids that are amazing, the best athletes who know that they can get paid in some way, whether it's legal or not, then that seems to be kind of the way that they do their recruiting, with all these crazy sex parties and paying the kids and giving them cars and all that stuff. So I don't know.
And then whenever that, like, gets found out about, like, the NCAA, like, throws down, like, violations and stuff. And the frustrating thing about that is I think that the NCAA overdoes it a lot of the time. Because, I mean, obviously there does need to be punishment. But when, you know, with USC, this is, like, a great example. When Reggie Bush, you know, he took all those improper benefits. He didn't get it from the coaches. He didn't get it from the school. He got it from people that were alumni.
Yeah.
And so, and it wasn't an issue where you had a coach say, hey, like, Reggie, here's this alumni, like, that can give you whatever you want. It wasn't anything like that. It was just Reggie Bush. You know, he used his fame and his name to his advantage, and he got free stuff. Yeah. And they took away his Heisman, which, you know, fine. That's whatever. But then they end up punishing the school. And this is a few years after he left. Like, he hasn't been at USC for a few years, and they find out. And then they punish the university and take away, like, a quarter of the scholarships that they had for the next year, and they couldn't go to the pro season for 2 years. And it's like, the only people that hurts are incoming people. That doesn't, like, USC wasn't aware of it, or if they were aware of it, I mean, maybe punish them a little bit, but you're taking away all these scholarships from these kids that, you know, they are not going to be able to play anymore at USC or whatever. They'll probably get a scholarship somewhere else, but then the scholarships those other places are taken away from the other kids who would have gone there. And for me, I mean, sure, there had to be some punishment, and there isn't really a lot you can do to Reggie Bush, but you took away his Heisman, which is one thing you could do. But punishing the university that badly for something that they didn't do is ridiculous, in my opinion.
And taking away the Heisman is a pretty big punishment. I mean, that's a pretty big disgrace, I think, for sure. You know, but yeah, it's really tricky when you have when you find out about it several years later. The guy's already in the NFL. He's gone.
Yeah.
Pete Carroll, that's another part of that, where he just was like, yeah, whatever. He leaves, goes to the NFL, gets paid $20 million, whatever, and then leaves the mess behind for everybody else to deal with. That's really a shame. It's too bad.
Yeah, it is.
Have you ever seen that movie Blue Chips from the 90s with Shaquille O'Neal and Anthony Hardaway, isn't it?
I have not seen
that. This is a great movie. It's kind of about what we're talking about with basketball, though, where they are all – Shaquille O'Neal plays a big-time high school recruit. All of them do, Anthony Hardaway, and then this other guy who wasn't an NBA player, but he was just an actor. And he kind of goes into that behind the scenes of, like, alumni giving them money and giving them cars and, you know, point-shaving scandals, and the guy on the team got his girlfriend pregnant or whatever and then needed money and all this stuff. And it's a really good movie, though, and it's all about this stuff. And it came out over 20 years ago, and I think at the time that it came out, there was a lot of this, like, oh, this is this fictional thing. This isn't a thing that happens, but, I mean, it's clearly widespread, still happening all the time, because you have all these shady characters involved. Sometimes they are even, you know, they're alumni, they're boosters, they're around, they're rich, so they're donating money to the program, so they're able to kind of go around and do whatever they want and have access to the players, when these guys are probably, you know, not honest people who shouldn't even be around these kids in the first place if they're trying to actually teach these kids how to be real men, you know?
Yeah. And unfortunately, there's a lot of corruption with that. But, I mean, there's no easy fix, but I do think that there are some things that need to be done a little bit better with it.
You know, another really good one, while I'm on the topic of good college sports movies, The Program. Have you ever seen that one?
I haven't.
It has Halle Berry, and she's like 20 in it. And do you know who Omar Epps is?
It's not ringing a
bell. I don't know if he's still really acting, but that's a great movie as well. James Caan from The Godfather. Have you seen The Godfather? Please tell me you've seen The Godfather. Oh, no.
I haven't.
Okay, you got some homework.
Heard it's good, though.
Yeah. it doesn't get better than that, man. But James Caan's a really famous. How about Misery? Have you seen that? About the crazy author?
No.
That's a good one, too. It's like a suspense thriller. Anyway, The Program is a great movie also about that's about a football program. And it supposedly was based kind of on Florida State, loosely based on Florida State, because they had a lot of these type of allegations. But that movie came out, I think, in 1991 also. Similar type of thing, talking about the problems that the athletes have to deal with, getting money. One of the athletes was one of the Heisman front runners, but he has a drinking problem, and you know, his family's not there for him. And then the best player, who is probably one of the most, you know, put together guys, ends up getting injured and stuff. And it's like this real tragedy about what happens to a lot of the players, probably. You know, most of these guys don't make it to the NFL or to the NBA. They end up having to figure out how to actually live their lives.
Yeah.
And they're in this fantasy world while they're at the team, if they're on these huge programs. And then they have this huge reality check. Yeah, right.
I mean, like, you can talk to guys from, like, anywhere, and they think that they're going to go play pro somewhere. And it's like, for me, I mean, playing pro in the NBA would be awesome, and maybe a few places overseas, but it's like, I mean, you can't necessarily plan on that unless, you know, you're those once-in-a-generation players.
Right. That's crazy.
But, I mean, you have, like, guys, I mean, for example, Sean Harris, he graduated from here last year, not just barely, or maybe he was still taking classes, but he finished his academic eligibility.
His athletic eligibility?
Athletic, not academic.
Yeah.
And he apparently is going to be playing professional ball in Chile.
Oh, that's cool.
And, I mean, that's cool for him to have that opportunity, but, I mean, is it really going to be worth it?
I I think it probably will, but you know, yeah, it's a big difference. I mean, the paycheck is a lot different.
Paycheck's gonna be a lot lower.
Yeah.
You're not gonna be able to communicate with like your family and friends as easily. I mean, you can do anything on the internet probably, but
yeah.
You can't really call unless you have a satellite phone, which you probably won't be able to afford. Well, I mean, because all the long distance stuff and all that, like, it would be expensive.
It's 2016, Ethan. I think you can make a phone call from Chile to the United States.
You can, but I'm just saying it would be expensive.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Skype. They have internet, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, you could do anything on the internet, but you also, I mean, you wouldn't see your family for a long time. And so, for me, that would be hard, and that wouldn't really be worth it.
Well, you know,
personal
opinion. Yeah, yeah. He can always quit if he doesn't like it and come back. I encourage people to do that if they have the opportunity because, you know, maybe he's interested in eventually becoming a coach or something, and that's a really good way to kind of get your foot in the door with something like that. You know, you go and you get getting this professional experience, and then you see the way it's played there, and that's like the real, you know, a lot different from the NBA where it's not just all these spoiled people that have everybody following them around all the time. Those are the guys that are really working hard, and they don't have all the natural gifts that the people in the NBA have. So you could probably learn a lot about, you know, coaching and how being able to like really play team basketball and stuff like that. So I don't know. Might be worth it. We'll see. We'll check up on him in a couple of years. We'll see what's up.
Yeah. And actually related to going pro or whatever, Jalen Moore has withdrawn his name from the NBA draft.
Oh, really?
Which, yeah, I mean, it kind of surprised me at first when he announced that he did put his name in the NBA draft. But then it was just like, well, no, I mean, it's an issue where he's just trying to get his name out there so that when next year comes around, he has more people like that know who he is, and they've kept track of him this year, and hopefully that's worked out. He got to work out with a few teams, and but
that's
he's
cool.
going to be back, so that's a positive because he's a good player for us.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's good for him, and that's good for USU. Hopefully, he doesn't get injured or anything crazy like that. You know, that's the only downside for those guys that want to go to the NBA early and they're nervous. And this comes back to what we were talking about with money. It's you know, I think some of them are able to get these kind of insurance policies, but probably not for him. He's not that big of a prospect to be able to be eligible for something like that. But as long as he doesn't get injured, all he's going to do is improve next year. And he's the focal point of the USU team anyway. So
currently,
hopefully it works out for him.
We'll see if that continues next year. I mean, we got some new guys coming in, and maybe one of them like stands out. I don't know. We'll have to find out. But I want to jump back to our wall of shame. So we're adding the Alabama football players.
Yeah.
That got in trouble by getting gun charges against them. It was actually funny when you brought that up, when you said it. You said they were playing with guns. And so, like, in my mind for a second, I imagined them on the football field with guns, and I was like, what the?
Oh.
So that's why I did a little bit of a laugh. I don't know if you got it.
That's that's the term I always say, because this type of thing comes up so much where, not only with athletes, but I just like to say that where, you know, people that try to act tough, like, I need my gun to act tough, to be tough. I have a big gun, and it's just kind of ridiculous. So I always say that. That's my slang for people having guns that probably shouldn't. You know, playing with guns, just like you used to with the little ones with the orange caps on the ends of them when you were a little kid.
I have an airsoft gun that it looks really realistic.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, but the orange thing fell off sometime, and I have no idea what happened to it. So, like, there's no way I can actually, like, use my airsoft gun. And like,
you could spray paint it or something, maybe.
Yeah, you could. I guess. Yeah, you could do that.
Yeah, it's wise, but it looks not. Yeah,
it looks realistic, but it's not it's not an actual.
Sketchy, man. You never know when someone's gonna, you know, you're just out there like, you know, shooting me with it or whatever. We're like running around, and then, you know, someone wants to be dramatic and they don't know what's going on, and they call the cops, and the cops show up, and they don't know what to do, and they shoot you, and it's like, oh, sorry, it was an airsoft gun. It's just like, try to avoid the tragedy.
Yeah.
Maybe some glow-in-the-dark spray paint.
Probably. But the next one on here is, well, we get to induct a BYU team again.
Oh.
And that's always...
Your favorite.
That's always good. So actually, I'm inducting the BYU volleyball team, men's volleyball, because they were the number one team. They were in the championship game for it, but they got swept. They lost 3-0.
Oh. How sad.
And they just didn't play very well at all. My parents love BYU. Well, most of my dad loves BYU, but my mom loves watching volleyball and particularly BYU volleyball. Yeah,
volleyball's
because
cool.
They're good. They're really good at volleyball. And my mom refs volleyball and she loves volleyball. So
nice.
I was home for the weekend a couple weekends ago, and they were watching it, and so I was watching it too. And they lost to Ohio State. And it was just because they just played bad. I mean, it wasn't that Ohio State was better. They played better, obviously, but they weren't the better team.
Yeah.
Like, it was obvious that BYU just wasn't playing very well. And it's like, for you to get to the championship, be ranked number one in the country for a while, for most of the season, and you just lay an egg like that, you're going on the wall of shame.
Yeah, too bad.
Yeah. And another one is, well, we got the referees for the playoffs. Because
it's been
they've
bad.
Had several terrible. Questionable decisions throughout the playoffs so far. In particular, in favor of the Thunder.
Yeah.
As crazy as that might sound.
Westbrook's travel on game one, where he called the timeout. That was pretty sketchy, right there in front of Steve Kerr.
It was, and at the same time, I felt like he was like getting bumped by Klay Thompson, so I feel like you could have called a foul, too. They don't ever call travels, so
I know.
But, I mean, it's still an issue where you probably should call something.
That's the thing, man. There's so much traveling that goes on that doesn't get called in the NBA.
Yeah.
It's
ridiculous. It's, I mean, it's like you're supposed to be the best basketball players in the planet, and you can't not travel.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, they let them. They're so lenient about when a guy catches the ball and is establishing possession and is shuffling their feet, and they switch pivot foots around. I mean, it's pretty crazy. I've seen a lot of stuff, and it's just like, all right, whatever. As long as you're going to be consistent about it, then I guess it's okay.
Consistently terrible.
Yeah. But also the whole – there's a lot of the taking three steps to go up for a dunk type of stuff.
Yeah.
And that frustrates me.
And once again, it's like you're the best athletes on the planet, and you can't do this within the rules.
You know, this probably –
this isn't the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah. This probably goes into my argument about why the 90s NBA is better than the current NBA. There's a lot less of that nonsense of allowed to just shuffle your feet around and travel because we have these JV rules now.
Yeah, and we'll jump into that in just 1 second. I just want to get to my last couple entries. Also, this one is also going to be related to that argument, but Tracy McGrady gets an induction for being Tracy McGrady, saying that the league today is watered down as compared to, like, the 90s. And then also, this is kind of a duel back and forth. I have StubHub for picking the 76ers for the first ad to be on jerseys.
Yeah.
And then I also have the 76ers for being the first team to put ads on their jerseys.
Yeah.
So
I think it's their desperate cry for help. It's the only way that they can get any attention is to do something like that.
I mean, they won the draft lottery.
Yeah, that too. They've done that several times though, and hasn't helped them yet.
Yeah.
What a just ridiculous joke of a franchise as of late.
Yeah, and I really hope that they actually start trying to turn it around this year, because they've legitimately been trying to lose for the last like 3 years.
Yeah, it hasn't been working for them either. With like. Well, we're losing. They're good.
I mean,
at losing.
They have been able to amass talent.
Yeah, they're getting a bunch of draft picks, but they're still not good. I mean, that's.
But I mean, they're not trying to be good yet. I think that they're going to try to be good this year. Now that they have another first round pick, I think that they're going to actually try a little bit harder this year, and we might see them get up to, maybe 30 wins this year.
Yeah,
they got to turn it around soon, or something's going to have to change.
Yeah, we're going to have to move them to Seattle or something.
Seattle fans wouldn't be too upset
Seattle,
about that.
Ooh, Seattle 76ers. I like the sound of that.
They'd probably go back to the Sonics, though.
Yeah, I have Sonics.
Just because of the history.
I love the Sonics, man. The Sonics were cool. It's kind of a shame that they're gone. That was a good, solid 90s squad, too. Yeah, Philadelphia, when was it? I think it was 2012, when one of the years that Derrick Rose got injured, they beat the Bulls in a tough series when the Bulls were, the number one seed in the East, and that was when Miami had LeBron and all those guys. And I was like, Philadelphia is kind of an up-and-coming team when they had Evan Turner and they had a couple other young guys. And
Drew Holiday.
Yeah, Holiday, and they had somebody else that was really good, too, who went somewhere else. I think he went to Indiana or something. But I thought they were kind of money, but they broke that up, and, you know, they weren't really. And then I remember they invested in Andrew Bynum, which I thought was a good gamble, but, I mean, that guy just fell off the face of the earth. He got injured or something, yeah. Sat there on the bench and got paid, like, $15 million for 1 year for Philadelphia. That probably really screwed them up, actually, just wasting all that money on him.
Could be.
I mean, they've brought in a couple of guys. They had, this was a couple of years ago as well, but they had Andre Iguodala used to play there. And
yeah.
Did they trade him or did he just leave as a free agent?
I feel like they traded him, but yeah. He may have left as a free agent. I don't remember
traded
for sure.
Traded him to get some draft picks.
Probably. I mean, they've been doing that a lot. Yeah. And that's one problem that I see for them moving forward is they don't really have veteran players. They have a bunch of young, talented guys, but they don't have any veterans and kind of set the tone in the locker room,
right.
Teach them like how you're supposed to go about your business and all that, which they can fix that in free agency. Be like, hey, we've got all this money. We'll float some your way. I mean, you're going to get a better offer from us than anyone else because, I mean, not everyone has money to pay you.
And it's it's like a big market and stuff, big sports town. That's the thing, though, with a team like that that's so terrible, I think they have a lot of trouble attracting good free agents because, good veteran free agents, at least, who aren't just looking to get a big paycheck because those guys want to go somewhere where they can actually win. You know, a guy like Pau Gasol or something like that, or, you know, Kevin Durant and those dudes. I don't know, Kevin Durant might be an example of someone that would consider it because he's trying to still get paid, or like a Dwight Howard or something. Maybe one of those guys.
Dwight Howard could maybe. Guess it's they already have a jammed up front court.
Yeah, yeah, but
they've got tons of really good big guys that they're gonna have to find time for. So, I think the veteran presence would have to be someone who would be a backup or would be a perimeter player.
Yeah. But best of luck to them.
Yeah.
Historic franchise. It would be cool for them to be good again. It's kind of like when the Cowboys are good or when the Cubs are good, it's like, it's exciting, you know?
Yeah. But I guess the time has come to jump into our main event.
I'm ready. Yes.
Ding, ding, ding.
Get my notes here. I made just a list of names because that's really all that I needed. I was like just making names of
that was all that you needed.
Who comes to mind when I think of the 90s?
And Tracy McGrady, right? Get some T-Mac in there.
I think he came into the league in like 98. So he's not even in I don't even need him. He'd be more of a, you know, early 2000s guy. And he did have a couple of years where he was very good.
That was it. It was like 2 years.
I don't know why
he got on the cover of NBA Live, and he just tanked after that.
That's usually a kiss of death for those video games. Those guys end up being garbage.
I mean, but this year we had Anthony Davis, Steph Curry, and James Harden, and they had pretty good years. I mean, mostly Curry had an all right year.
Yeah,
it wasn't anything special, but it was all right.
Curry had a great year, but Harden didn't.
I was
have
being
a really
sarcastic.
Oh, okay, okay.
I mean, he just shattered his own record for 3-pointers in a season.
Yeah,
and got his second MVP in a row. And So anyway,
but Harden.
Sometimes there's issues. Harden
Davis.
He
didn't
still
have
played
good years.
Pretty well. They still both played pretty well. Maybe not quite as well as last year, but I think it was just a matter of their team. But that's something that you can't really tell right now. I mean, you'll have to see in the future, but I still think that they're going to be tough going forward. If Harden would be especially good if he would just learn how to play even average defense.
Yeah, I know. He's just such a joke on defense.
Or even below average defense. If he could play any kind of defense, I think that they add maybe 5 wins to the Rockets.
Yeah. That's the thing that makes first of all, that's what makes Golden State the whole team really good is they play tough defense.
Yeah.
That's also what makes LeBron James so great.
Yeah.
Talking about
because LeBron plays both ways.
Yeah, he's one of the best defenders every year, and he can guard every position. And that's where I think he kind of gets underrated a little bit. When people talk about Steph Curry versus LeBron James, they're constantly just talking about stats and offense, and there's absolutely no comparison between the two defensively. And that's half the game.
Yeah.
So
unfortunately, some players don't you know, realize that. They just like, oh, well, I'm good on offense, so I don't have to play defense.
Yeah, well, and then fans think that way too, and coaches will allow that to happen as well. But yeah, the teams that can't play defense, they don't. Those aren't teams that are end up being really great and that win championships.
And that's why I don't think James Harden will ever win a championship unless he goes and isn't the number one guy, because he can't play defense at one of the positions that you really need good defenders, because there's a lot of good wings.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get to your names.
Okay, my names. All right, so here's the names that I just made note of. I made a little pool for each position of the first ones that came to mind. Okay, so for big guys, Shaq, David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, Hakeem Olajuwon. Those are just the first four centers that came to name. Yeah. And there's still another probably 10 that are studs that were from the 90s. And then for small forwards, I just put Scottie Pippen and Grant Hill. And you might not really remember Grant Hill that well, because he had like five, 6 years that where he was a total stud. And then
he got injured, and then like he was never quite the same.
Also for that one, and I forgot to put this name in there, Penny Hardaway.
What about Clyde Drexler?
Clyde Drexler, too. He's a two guard, though.
Is he?
These are threes, yeah. But then
James Worthy.
That's more of 80s.
Okay.
But yeah, he was all right in the 90s, too.
Yeah.
Came in. But, and then two guards, of course. You have MJ.
Wait, who's that?
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson. I didn't know he played basketball. It must have been before he changed his skin color.
And then you got Reggie Miller. Was amazing. And then Penny Hardaway, too. People don't really realize. Penny Hardaway kind of got overlooked. Although, did you see that Magic Moment 30 for 30 that just came out recently?
I haven't.
You should check it out. That's where I got reminded of how amazing Anthony Hardaway was. He was like...
What are we talking about, Anthony Hardaway or Penny Hardaway now?
Oh, it's the same dude.
Penny they're two different dudes.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Penny Hardaway played for the Warriors. Anthony Hardaway played for the Magic.
That's Tim Hardaway.
Tim. Oh, okay. Okay.
I know what I'm talking about with 90s.
I knew there was
Anthony Hardaway and Penny Hardaway are the same same dude.
Okay.
I'll just call him Penny and stay consistent so that we know what I'm talking about. Great shoes, by the way, too. They've been coming out with his old sneakers. He's, like, got some awesome shoes. Then for point guards, I put down Gary Payton, John Stockton, the hometown boy John Stockton, arguably greatest point guard of all time. Scrappy. And then for fours, I got Karl Malone, Barkley, Dennis Rodman, and then my dark horse, Sean Kemp.
He's your dark horse?
Dude.
He was pretty good.
Yeah, he was money, but that's one of the guys that people kind of forget about because he fell off really hard. After, what was it, when the NBA had the lockout or something, he just, like, ate a bunch of fried chicken or something and got overweight and then he went to Cleveland and he showed up and he was, like, 50 pounds overweight and he just was never good after that. But he was... played on the Seattle Sonics in the finals against the Bulls when the Bulls were 72-10, and took it to six games, actually. There's a lot of these teams throughout the 90s that, you know, Michael Jordan crushed their dreams and the Bulls crushed their dreams.
Yeah.
But a lot of those teams that lost, like the Jazz, the Sonics, even the Lakers, the Knicks, the Rockets, a lot of those squads, if they played today, I think they would be winning the championship. I think they were better than a lot of the best teams we have now. And my other notables, Glenn Rice, man, that guy was so cash. What a great shooter. Scored 41 points in one All-Star game. And probably with no dunks, just like shooting threes all day. That's a guy that Michael Jordan always admired because he was such a great shooter. Yeah, you know, we were talking about some of those other squads from the 90s. Like the Hornets we were talking about earlier. Man, they were really good, too. That's one of those teams that always had their dreams crushed. Miami was really good when they had Alonzo Mourning and Tim Hardaway, who you were thinking of. Those teams would always play tough against the Bulls or the Knicks. And Atlanta was really good even back then. And these are the teams that just get overlooked and forgotten about because they're just like, oh, whatever. They just like they lost in the semifinals or whatever in the playoffs, but they were just playing against teams that they just had no chance against.
Yeah, and so that's reason why the 90s are better.
That's one part of why the 90s are better. Oh, all okay. Those superstars.
I wouldn't argue that those are a lot of really good players, but I will argue that there's just as many, if not more, good players now. Maybe, I mean, obviously, Michael Jordan is transcendent, but, I mean, so is Kobe Bryant and LeBron James. I mean, they're
not
both
on the same level.
I'm not going to make the decision that they're on the same level as MJ or not. MJ was ferocious, and I think that he had a little bit more drive to win than maybe those other two. But I'm saying as far as, like, ability and talent, I would say that they're just every bit as talented as him. I will say Michael Jordan, you know, he just had the drive to win. I don't think Kobe was ever anywhere near as good of a defender as either of those two. But he money on offense, but and yeah. He wasn't terrible on defense. I just don't think he was at the same level.
I thought Kobe was a good defender, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying he wasn't an elite defender.
I'm not saying
he's a bad defender. I just don't think he was elite. I think that he was good. I just don't think elite works. Yeah,
definitely toward the end of his career, too. That was the part of his game that he just stopped, seemed to stop caring about.
I mean, it's working for Harden, right?
Yeah, right.
He's getting paid to do nothing on defense.
Yeah.
Tell
me your other guys that make you think that today's NBA is better than the 90s.
Well, I mean, you can throw in... And first off, I want to preface this by saying, I mean, you did put a lot of post players, and centers specifically, that, I mean, there isn't really as many nowadays. But that's because the game has changed. I mean, not necessarily for the better, but, you know, teams, they want to run and they want to spread out the floor. And so a lot of the guys that, you know, dominated in the 90s wouldn't really do much now because the game's just different, because it's more of a guard-oriented thing. And so they don't need the big guys to be better as good as they needed them back then, because it was more of an issue where, you know, you had to be good inside or you wouldn't win. But, I mean, you look at the Warriors. You know, their offense comes from the perimeter, and they shoot lots of threes. They do some stuff inside, but it's not as big of a focus as it was in the 90s. And that's league-wide. There's not as much of a focus on the inside. And so that's why I don't know if it's because we just don't have as many talented big guys or if it's because of the way the game has changed by itself. But I think that's a reason why there's not as many big guys. Obviously, 90s much better for big guys. But I will say there's a lot more perimeter players that can, you know, take advantage of you in many different ways. I mean, you got Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook. Those guys can dribble all over the place. Steph Curry can hit it from anywhere on the floor. He's inside the gym, and it's in his range.
Yeah.
And Russell Westbrook is a fierce competitor, and he can take anyone to the rim. Sometimes he doesn't convert, but most of the time he does. And he can still hit some shots sometimes. You got Kevin Durant. Who can hit a shot from all over the place, and one of the few guys who kind of still has the mid-range game going on.
Yeah,
that's something that was emphasized in the 90s, but now it's more about the three-point line. You got players like Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. I wouldn't necessarily say that they are, you know, the most elite of players, but they're like probably second tier, and those guys have been good for years and years. Tim Duncan, I think, is the best power forward to have played.
Yeah, probably is.
And especially given that he's had as much success as he has, as the league has gone away from post play, and the importance of it. But one thing that is really important is that there's way different, like it's way different the way the game is officiated, because in the 90s, whatever, it was discouraged to play in zone defenses or to have someone help.
It was actually illegal.
Yeah, it was illegal, and you couldn't have like someone come from the weak side to help defend a guy attacking the basket. And now, like, everyone goes to it. Like, everyone can attack the guy who's attacking the basket and try to help block the shot or force him to take a tougher shot. And that's something that you couldn't do in the 90s. But yet, even with that, there's still guys that are able to, you know, make those plays happen, like Russell Westbrook and LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. Those guys can still slash and get to the rim and still make it, despite the fact that they're having like two or three defenders trying to cover them. Whereas in the 90s, it was one on one, and that was like, at least in that situation, you couldn't help out as much because, like you said, it was illegal.
Well, there was still help side defense. There wasn't zone defense, but the thing is too that this is what is such a luxury for LeBron and Dwayne Wade and Westbrook and everybody that plays now. That's a aggressive penetration type of a player. In the 90s, like for MJ, if he was going to go and take the ball to the rim, then he was going to go and if he got past John Starks and he was playing the Knicks, then he had to go and deal with Charles Oakley or Patrick Ewing at the rim,
yeah,
or Dikembe Mutombo or Shaquille O'Neal or all these crazy huge dudes that were still playing help side defense, or David Robinson or all these guys.
Yeah.
So, and they were getting touched up. I mean, there's so much softer now about calling what used to be in the 90s and even in the 80s was even more crazy. Fouls that were just like, oh, that's a playoff foul or that's a tough foul. Now those are all flagrant twos, and people are getting thrown out of the games for that.
That is one thing that's I think that it is kind of worse off for the NBA is that like any kind of a good like foul. I mean, obviously you don't want to overdo it, but there were some tough fouls, and as long as you're going for the ball, I think it's all right. But I mean, if you're just attacking the guy to attack the guy, I mean, that shouldn't be allowed. But I don't think that they should give flagrants just because it's a hard foul. It's like, no, I'm sending a message to you.
Right.
But, yeah, okay, so one thing about it, though, is, like, you'd think with those changes that it'd be easier for teams to score, right? Well, I mean, defenses have been, like, improved since the 90s because of, like, the differences in how it's called. But, I mean, you can't do the armbar thing, and so obviously that you'd think that'd help the offense. But, like, the difference between the year before and after that rule change is, like, really close. If anything, the defense improved after that because they had half a point less per game on average. There was 1% less shooting percentage, field goal percentage. Opponents' turnover percentage, it was 14.3 before and it was 13.6 after.
What year was that they changed that
rule? That was 2002, 2003, I think.
Yeah.
Not seeing it the second. But then you have
that's interesting.
One other thing is the defensive rebound percentage. It went from 68% to 73%. So the defense was getting more rebounds after that and stuff like that. And so, like, with that change, like, it seems like it would have helped the offense, but it didn't really. Defenses are actually better the year afterwards. And so, I mean, there's that myth that, you know, they were better at defense before, like in the 90s or whatever. And there were some great defenders, but I think overall teams play better defense.
Yeah, I don't know. It's
obviously, like, most of this stuff is just, like, it's you can only debate it. You can't prove it one way or the other.
Yeah, I mean, I think really the way you got to do it is you got to go to specific teams and say, or specific players, and really specific teams is what matters, and say, is this team better at playing defense? Like, is the best team, the best defensive team now better than the best defensive team then? I think that's the best way to look at it. And I think that...
I would say as a team, yeah.
So
with the exception of maybe the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls are obviously fantastic throughout. And a lot of that was MJ, but a lot of it was he had some great teammates. Namely Scottie Pippen, as one of the top 25 guys of all time, was on his team as well.
Yeah, great defender, too.
And they're both great both ways. And
Dennis Rodman was a great defender, too.
Yeah, he was a great defender. You had lots of really good defenders on that team or whatever. Yeah. But I would say that, you know, nowadays... I would say that the Spurs and, like, the Warriors and I think even the Cavs, like, they could play better defense than almost every team from the 90s.
I don't agree with that. No. I think the 90s Knicks were studs on defense with Patrick Ewing. They had a lot of really defensive-minded guys. Charles Oakley, that was, like, his whole thing. Anthony Mason, I don't even know if you remember who that is. He used to shave words into his head. He was, like, the first dude to do that. They would do these crazy designs that said New York and stuff in his hair. It was crazy. He shot free throws with one hand. He was very goofy. He was kind of like a Dennis Rodman type, where it's like, get rebounds and defend and
we'll just
don't
ignore all that random stuff that you're doing.
and you're goofy. But, like, that's another one of these crazy guys who if you get past your guy and you got to go and get some help side defense, then you're going to run into some crazy dude like that that's like straight off the playground.
I mean, I will say, I mean, the Knicks were also a good defense, but I mean, they kind of struggled on offense. I think that's one thing that teams nowadays, you have to be good at both in order to win. And I think that, I mean, I guess that also kind of held true, but that was why no one really gave Jordan too much of a challenge in like the finals, because there weren't teams that were good on both ends. They could do decent in one, but not the other. And Jordan's team was good on both ends. And I mean, that it's more common now that a team is good on both ends than it was back then.
You know, I think that's a good point, but I think people kind of forget about how good the teams were that the Bulls faced in the finals. They didn't go through and sweep people in the finals. They usually were going 5-6 games.
Yeah, and 5 or 6. I mean, that's it's like they get like one game, and part of it, like a lot of that, was because you know the Bulls didn't, you know, play as smart in a couple games, and so I mean the Bulls were in a league of their own, but you know obviously they would nip at them a little bit, but the Jazz didn't really have a chance of beating the Bulls, to be honest.
Man, I think that you're kind of understating the Jazz, because both of those series went to 6 games, and they both came down to, like, a lot of the games came down to the last 5 seconds. And it could have gone either way, but just the Bulls had Jordan, who's just the most clutch player ever. And there was weird stuff that happened. Like, I remember in game one, I remember this game because I was at this game, because I was so lucky to be able to go to this game. Game one of the 97 finals, Jazz and Bulls. The Jazz should have won that game. Karl Malone missed a couple free throws. I think the Jazz were up one. Yeah, the Jazz were up one, and they fouled Karl Malone, and there was probably like 10 seconds to go, and he missed both free throws, and then Jordan came down and hit a buzzer beater. So it's like, you know, because the Bulls, they would have had to have gotten a three, which isn't tough. It's not like where you throw it in now to Steph Curry or Klay Thompson. That's where those guys are crazy now, where you have, like, those specific guys where you can actually feel good about shooting all these threes. You know, the Bulls had a couple really good three-point shooters, but not on any of the level that they have now for the Warriors. Absolutely not. There's no question about that. But, you know, and then, like, Jordan's last game in 98, you know, he has that famous shot where he pushed Brian Russell, and it's like, that was another one where Jazz should have won that game, but Michael stole the ball from Karl Malone because he like kind of like snuck around and swatted it from him and then came down and then hit that shot.
Yeah.
I mean, both of those series were really, really tough, and it could have gone either way. I remember actually in 98, leading up to the finals, Sports Illustrated put out a really elaborate article about why the Jazz would beat the Bulls. And I was just a little kid, but I remember getting nervous about it because I was a huge Bulls fan. Going to my dad, and I was like, oh, Dad, this guy wrote this article about how the Jazz are going to beat the Bulls and all the scouting reports and about why they're going to do it. And he just started laughing, and he was like, you know why the Jazz are not going to beat the Bulls, Mike? And I was like, oh, and he's Michael Jordan. And he was right.
Yeah, I mean.
But it took 6 games.
Yeah. But, I mean, that means that Jazz only won 2, so. But, I mean, there were some good teams. But I think that one issue that they had in the 90s and that isn't as much of an issue, it is at times, is that they would have, teams would have, like, one guy who could score and that was it. Maybe a second guy that could sort of score okay, but a lot of guys couldn't score. And nowadays, like, a lot of teams are able to spread the points around, depending on, like, the matchups and all that. And that was one reason why Jordan was able to beat a lot of these teams, is because they had one guy that could score, and then he and Pippen would be all over them the entire game. And so the other team just couldn't keep up in the scoring.
Yeah, there was more of a concentration of having one main dude to be counted on for a lot of the offense, whereas now it's a lot of the blueprint is the whole big three thing ever since the Boston with Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, and Paul Pierce, where it's like, oh, you got to have three big-time scorers or big-time players. That's kind of since been, they've calmed down on that a little bit, because it's like, well, you can also be the Spurs and just have like 6 amazing people.
Yeah.
But there, yeah, you're right about the whole like, we want to have distribution of scoring. Like, that's definitely Cleveland's idea. That seems to be Golden State's idea. But they do kind of, you know, like,
I mean, you do have a couple guys that could score better, obviously.
Yeah.
But they, like, you don't have guys out there that are liabilities.
Yeah. But if you look at all the championship teams and the great teams from the 90s, they also had multiple scoring threats. Like, definitely with the Bulls, but aside from them, when Michael was playing baseball and Houston won the championships, they had Clyde Drexler and they had Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah.
So two great scorers. And then they had teams like Phoenix Suns with Barkley was the main guy, but they also had other guys like Kevin Johnson, but definitely not on that same level. But then, like, Orlando had Penny Hardaway and Shaquille O'Neal, two great scorers.
Yeah.
And,
but outside of the two main scorers, a lot of guys were liabilities.
Yeah.
I mean, and we're out of time and you're going to be late.
Oh, wow. How fun.
Like, that's my argument is, I guess, going back to Tracy McGrady saying that the league is watered down now. it's just not true. Because there's probably more talent overall than there was in the 90s. Maybe there was a couple of guys like Jordan that were better than anyone now, but overall, there's a lot higher talent level, I think.
I don't think there's a higher talent level now, but I also don't think that the league is watered down now.
Yeah,
I think, you know, this is like what we originally started talking about this. There were a lot of garbage teams at the bottom end in the 90s, too.
Yeah, especially when they added the two teams. They added the Grizzlies and the Raptors.
Right.
And
they were terrible for 5 years.
When you do expansions, like, it's going to water down your league.
Yeah.
So, if anything, the 90s was a little bit more watered down. But it's a debate that can go on and on and on.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's all the time we have.
Thanks for having me on, man. That was really fun.
Yeah, you can come on anytime.
Great. Thank you.
But we want to thank everyone for listening. Have a great weekend. Hope you're enjoying your summer. And once again, we're going to FM soon, so that's exciting. You'll be able to listen to us in your car. but this has been The Bullpen here on Aggie Radio. And have a great weekend.